Welcome to Trial by Wine. We take a closer look at crimes that highlight how fascinating humans can be. Schmitty, Swanee and Clarkey visit crimes and run them through their jury of three, debating both sides of the case to agree an appropriate, if totally fictitious, sentence. Please be advised, Trial by Wine may include explicit or disturbing content and will include drunken rambling. Listener discretion is advised.
All right, how are we?
Going well.
Very well.
Fair to middly. No, I'm actually quite good.
Yep. Smashing them out of the ballpark today.
Still having torso nightmares, but other than that.
But for the torso, we are doing a third in a row now. Jeepers. Apart from going to get something to eat and feeding the dog. Any other news?
Nothing worth sharing. No. Just my children fighting with each other.
Standing. Okay.
That old chestnut.
Shall we introduce ourselves then? I'm Schmitty.
I'm Swanee.
I'm Clarkey, and together we are
Trial by Wine. And what are we drinking, Swanee? Tell me you've topped up at least another Diet Coke.
Sparkling water.
Oh, sparkling water. Whoa, hitting the hard stuff.
Ooh. You need to calm down.
I know. A wild one.
And you boys?
We've progressed to a Big Red Duck, which is the one that we make.
The one you make yourselves, yes. I finally remembered that myself. Yeah,
the Zen Reserve, so delicious.
Okay, I'm still on the Sauvignon Blanc I started in the last episode. I would say, well, with what's in my glass, comfortably halfway through that bottle.
Let's go with primed.
Yeah, I'm well primed. Yeah. All right, who's got a story?
Excellent. I've got one.
Okay, go for it.
So today we are going to continue the theme of places that Stu and Clarkey visited on their holiday, and we're heading.
This is going to go on for like 2 years,
but it will be able to.
So long,
because the holiday went on for almost as long. Yeah.
I know. So today we're going to go to Mexico.
Oh, okay. I've been waiting for the Mexico ones. All right, cool. Great.
Yeah. So we visited Mexico in September last year and absolutely loved it. Delicious food, particularly the street food. Fascinating history, including Aztec and Mayan, with structures such as Chichen Itza. Beautiful natural aspects, including cenotes, which are, you would have seen the photos, big sinkholes full of water, ocean vistas, and incredible snorkeling and diving. There's a lot to love about Mexico. However, when it comes to true crime podcasting, it's a big minefield. There are a lot of stories.
Yeah, when it comes to true crime podcasting, there's a lot to love about Mexico.
It's a gold mine. I was kind of going, you know, there was one story I was going with, and I might do that later, but I'm not quite sure about that one. In the end, I've just gone with the stock standard drug cartels.
Well, can they come after us? I've watched.
Yes, they can.
So,
this is all in the public domain, I'm sure.
Swanee, with you in mind, I decided not to go with any specific drug cartel. I thought I'd keep it more broadly.
I thought of it before, and I'm like, I wouldn't do it to myself. Nothing's that. Oh my God, they're hideous.
So this is more about the war on drugs, and I want you to think of it in the context of Star Wars. So there's the all-powerful Empire, and then there's the Rebels. And as I go through the story, there'll probably be times where I'll ask you whether you think this part of the story is the evil Empire or the Rebels, because it's very, very complicated, and sometimes it's hard to see who's good and who's bad.
And if we think it's the evil empire, do we go bum 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 bum?
I think that is excellent work. Yes. Yes.
Well, my lack of Star Wars knowledge.
I know.
I'm worried.
Just think, who's the bad guy? Who's the good guy?
Could you just tell me who they are? What the empire?
The evil empire.
Yeah.
Which is, it probably should just be the empire, but anyway.
That's Darth Vader and his cronies.
Yeah.
And then there's the rebels. Rebels. And who would that be? Anybody who's not Darth Vader?
Luke Skywalker.
Han Solo, all those
Princess Leia. Yeah.
Okay. Rebels. Okay, cool. Got it. I've made a note of that. I'm ready to go.
Okay, so first up, my sources. It's a short run today. So Wikipedia, Britannia.com, NewYorker.com. My favourite,
not really, Sky News Australia and news.com, because we will have an Australian reference at some point. You ready?
Yes.
Okay. So first up, a bit of background. So Mexico has long been used as a distribution point for narcotics and contraband between Latin America and US markets. Mexican bootleggers supplied alcohol to the United States gangsters throughout prohibition in the US, and the onset of illegal drug trade with the US began when prohibition came to an end in 1933. Near the end of the 1960s, Mexicans started to smuggle drugs on a major scale. During the 1970s and 80s, Colombia's Pablo Escobar, who you've no doubt heard of, was the main exporter of cocaine and dealt with organized criminal networks all over the world. While Escobar's Medellin cartel and the Cali cartel would manufacture the products, Miguel Angel Felix Gallardo's Guadalajara cartel would oversee distribution. When enforcement efforts intensified in South Florida and the Caribbean, the Colombian organizations formed partnerships with the Mexico-based traffickers to transport cocaine by land through Mexico into the United States.
What, as opposed to coming up from the sea, the Caribbean Sea,
ocean,
into Florida?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So they'd originally been coming that way. Okay. Change of route. Got it.
So it was an easy switch because the Americans already had established infrastructure that stood ready to serve the Colombia-based traffickers. By the mid-1980s.
Did you say Americans there or Mexicans?
Americans.
Did I?
Did you mean, yes, did you mean Mexicans?
Yeah, you said Americans. You said
Americans. I meant Mexicans.
Good.
That's right. This is easily... This was easily accomplished.
Americans are making it really easy for
you. We've got all the infrastructure.
Let me have a sip of wine and rephrase that. This was easily accomplished because Mexico had already established infrastructure that stood ready to serve Colombia-based traffickers. By the mid-1980s, the organizations from Mexico were well-established and reliable transporters of Colombian cocaine. At first, the Mexican gangs were paid in cash for their transportation services. But in the late 1980s, the Mexican transport organizations and the Colombian drug traffickers settled on a payment-in-product arrangement.
It's just like that paying in alcohol for labor.
In alcohol. I'm okay with payment in alcohol for certain tasks. Transporters from Mexico usually were given 35 to 50% of each cocaine shipment. This arrangement,
it is a lot.
Mm. This arrangement meant that organizations from Mexico became involved in the distribution as well as the transportation of cocaine and became formidable traffickers in their own right.
Mm.
So any thoughts on evil empire or rebels?
I think they're all evil empire right now.
Okay. How's that sound again?
Ba 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 ba.
All right. So we're now going to talk about the drug sources and use. So the US State Department estimates that 90% of cocaine entering the United States is produced in Colombia, and that the main transit route is through Mexico. Drug cartels in Mexico control approximately 70% of the foreign narcotics flow into the US. Mexican cartels distribute Asian methamphetamine to the United States, and it is believed that almost half the cartel's revenue comes from cannabis.
Can I ask a question?
Yes.
Sorry, Claire. So did you just say Asian methamphetamine?
Yeah.
So does that have to go to Mexico before it then goes into
America?
Yeah.
Okay. Yes. Okay. I didn't go into how that
it's like a
works.
Launch. It all goes through there. Okay, right.
So the reason I brought that up is I think effectively the Mexico is like the Amazon of drug distribution. So
the Amazon.
I thought you meant the Amazon River or the Amazon itself.
Think of it as the planet. One of those big warehouses where everything goes into and then goes out.
Shit.
It's a lot. So cocaine, heroin, and increasingly meth are also traded. As the US is the world's largest consumer of cocaine, as well as of other illegal drugs, the demand is what motivates the drug business. And the main goal of the Mexican cartels is introduce narcotics into the US. Supply and demand.
It's just economics.
Exactly. So the main factors driving the Mexican drug situation, particularly initially, although it is now perpetuated, is widespread poverty and poor education. So among the OECD countries, Mexico has the second highest degree of economic disparity between the extremely poor and extremely rich. The bottom 10% in the income hierarchy disposes of 1.36% of all of the country's resources, whereas the upper 10% dispose of almost 36%.
Shit.
In 2012, it was estimated that the Mexican cartels employed over 450,000 people directly and a further 3.2 million people's livelihoods depended on various parts of the drug trade.
Really is Amazon. Yep.
It is. Yeah. They have the biggest employer.
Yeah, that's
right. Probably is.
It would be, I reckon. 3.2 mil. So in cities such as Ciudad Juarez, up to 60% of the economy depended on illegal sources of income. And the problem that goes hand in hand with poverty is the level of schooling. So in the 1960s, when Mexican narcotic smugglers started to smuggle drugs on a major scale, only 5.6 of the Mexican population had more than 6 years of schooling. More recently, despite the Mexican economy...
You make jokes about TAFE, but education's very important.
It is. There should be more Cert 3s in distribution, maybe.
Maybe not.
More recently, despite the Mexican economy ranking 31st out of 134 economies for investment in education, which was 5.3% of its GDP, Carla, this is probably a lot of numbers that is making.
No, that's
hard.
Right. I'm not in my math head. I was still one back, which was when you're talking about the education, saying that it was.
Yeah.
Was your point that it was low at the time?
Very low. Yeah.
And has it remained low? Well, I didn't know if you were then going to go on to say that as a result of the drugs that it got higher or got lower or just stayed the same.
So more recently,
yeah.
Despite the Mexican economy ranking 31st out of 134 in investment, so they've improved their investment in education quite dramatically. So it's 5.3% of their entire spend. Yeah. As of 2009, the nation's primary education system is ranked only 116th out of the 134. Okay. So they're spending heaps, but they're not really
right
seeing the benefit.
Yeah.
And there's things about, you know, teachers' unions who are pushing back any attempts to improve it because then they get KPIs and all these things that they don't really want.
Okay. Oh, no, they've got standards they have to meet. Yeah. Oh, you poor things.
Yeah, it's that
Jesus.
Kind of thing. Righto, so let's talk about some of the cartels. So there's loads of cartels operating in Mexico. Generally, they control different geographic areas or distribution routes, and their power shifts depending on the wars with other cartels, police interactions, and political efforts. So some of them are the Sinaloa cartel, Juarez cartel, Tijuana cartel, Beltran Leyva cartel, Gulf cartel, Los Zetas, La Familia cartel, and there is even one called the Knights Templar, isn't it?
The Knights Templar, that's rude.
Literally sit there and let's brainstorm a name? Well, I was thinking of this. No, I don't like it. What else have you got? No, Knights Templar.
I was watching a bit of Indiana Jones, you know, The Last Crusade. Why not call it the Knights Templar?
There was a story about how they found a whole lot of plastic helmets in the jungle somewhere that they suspected belonged to the Knights Templar, and the plastic helmets were used for initiation.
Oh.
Sorry, do you mean the Knights Templar, the cartel, or the actual Knights Templar? Because I don't think they were wearing plastic helmets.
Yeah, so I think that means I'm. That's yeah, yeah. I think that means I'm at the cartel. Yes.
And they were using it. What do you mean for initiation? What, they were just killing people, or
yeah, they had little rituals.
Well, I didn't go into that, and I've tried to stay away from a lot of the horrors of the cartel. There are a couple that I talk about, but you go into that, it is
horrendous. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So. Just briefly, the Sinaloa cartel is one of the most famous ones, and I'm sure you've all heard of it. It was led by El Chapo, who was Mexico's most wanted drug trafficker with an estimated net worth of $1 billion. This made him the 1,140th richest man in the world and the 55th most powerful, according to his Forbes magazine profile.
He's got a Forbes profile for a start.
I know.
I'm just thinking about him in the context of Jeff Bezos. Anyway, back to your analogy earlier.
I don't think Jeff Bezos has spent $2 million burning cash to keep his daughter warm or stored cash in warehouses and written
Not
off
10% know.
Of it due to rodent activity.
Know.
But they're
well,
all
you
things
know, you
that,
say written off,
El Chapo
but think
did.
About Amazon. Amazon's track record for not paying taxes in certain countries. Anyway, let's not get on to Amazon.
Maybe that's another similarity with the cartels.
That's another. Yeah.
So illegal the Sinaloa cartel fought the Juarez cartel in a long and bloody battle for control over drug trafficking routes in and around the northern city of Ciudad Juarez. Again, the battle eventually resulted in defeat for the Juarez cartel, resulting in the deaths of between 5,000 and 12,000 people.
Oh, my God.
Like, they're huge numbers. And they're literally saying they find it really hard to estimate the number of people who have died as a result of cartel action versus any number of other, you know, street crimes or whatever it might be.
Up to 12,000 people.
12,000. Yep, just between these two cartels. As of May 2010, numerous reports by Mexican and US media stated that Sinaloa had infiltrated the Mexican federal government and military and colluded with it to destroy other cartels. Cartels are heavily involved. Oh, hang on. Should we do an Evil Empire Rebels check?
Sure. Sinaloa?
They are definitely the Evil Empire at the moment, aren't they? So cartels are heavily involved in information warfare. These groups have a variety of tools they use to influence public opinion, such as food handouts, sponsoring of community developments, social media posts, filmed press releases.
Social media posts. What does your T-shirt say? Sinaloa. Cartel. Oh, where'd you get Sinaloa. That? Oh, I went to like their kids camp. Oh, Sinaloa. Yeah. Oh, you're so lucky.
Welcome to the Sinaloa Stadium.
Yeah.
I mean, we're laughing, but if the cartel puts more money into the country to get people to be quiet and compliant, as in more than the government or whatever, then that's exactly how they win it out.
Now you're beginning to understand the evil empire versus the rebels thing.
That's how evil they are. It's like we've got so much money, we can invest it. It was like your Greek.
The Greek and Robin Hood.
The Greek Robin Hood, yeah. The Philolopolopolopolis or whatever they were called.
Yeah.
It wasn't that. But, you know, he basically went, Vasilis, he went and he paid off a bunch of people. Now, to be fair, he never murdered anyone. But he did that thing where he said, okay, well, you're really poor, so I'll give you over the odds for all these things. And people are like, no, he's a nice guy.
Yeah.
Not to say that cartels are quite the same because they're not nice and they are killing people. And I'm sure there are a lot of people who are terrified of them. But it is that thing about they can invest.
And that's kind of the way propaganda and these sorts of things work, whereby if you're benefiting a lot from something that you otherwise would have no – you know, there'd be no existence of whatever it is they're providing.
That's right.
You kind of become dependent on them.
Yep, you're in a rock and a hard place. You either have nothing or you go with the evil empire.
Yes. Yes, Swanee, social media posts are used to for their propaganda. Filmed press release style video communications, physical narco messages, narco corridos, which I think are musicians who sing songs about the great escapades of the cartels.
Yeah,
it's that kind of thing. Well, not in Mexico.
Minstrels?
But yes, it's that kind of thing. And private Mariachi messaging bands, such as WhatsApp chats. So the goal of the narco propaganda is to influence public opinion, threaten or accuse rivals, and generally communicate with those outside their organization. Their primary method of communication is the physical narco message, which can range from professionally printed banners and hastily written messages on cardboard or paper.
Can you confirm for me or clarify for me what's a narco? Because I know it's a narcotic and, you know, narcs and narcos used to be people who dobbed in people who use narcotics, in my understanding.
Well,
so what are you talking about when you're saying a narco
the context, message? The context of a narco message is, a drug message, a message from the cartels. And
just PR for them.
Exactly right. Yeah, yeah. Right. So they're commonly displayed in public places such as bridges, town centres and highways. Many are also left at crime scenes, such as after an assassination.
Sorry, they leave a door drop.
So they might leave a sign that says, you know, after they've assassinated someone.
An A-frame, usually.
Yeah,
I can give you I can give you an example of one.
Sandwich board?
But you will be a little bit horrified. So let's just listen. I'll put the crime to one side, but the context of it is that they do escalating things because they need to shock people as to how bad they are so that they can control them.
And they take ownership of that by saying this was done by us. Is that what I was saying?
So one of them said something along the lines of Happy New Year, this is what your year will be like or something along those lines.
Mm-hmm.
And do you want to hear what had happened?
I've seen imagery and read stories about like loads of people murdered and hung over
the bridge. I've read like American Death.
Eviscerated. The messages are there. Yeah.
So there's all the stories of, you know, 9 people hanging from a bridge and all that sort of stuff as people, you know, people in the community are going to work. This one, though, was because, they've done beheadings on YouTube and other social media sites, all these things to shock. And because all of that is starting to not have the impact they once wanted, you might want to take your headphones off for this.
It's not fair. She asked the question.
The one that this Happy New Year message was about was they had killed somebody in their 20s, taken his face off and stitched it onto a soccer ball and then left that with a sign saying, Happy New Year, this is what you're...
Really, you can't laugh at that.
It's so macabre and wrong and...
I don't even... I'm beyond...
I mean, who would think to do that?
Yeah.
It's like they made a real Wilson.
Imagine if your kid went up to play soccer and kicked it and someone's face was on it.
Oh, that's awful. Yeah, all right, okay. I don't know. The whole thing just sounded so ludicrous.
Okay, so in that instance and in every instance, is the idea that they're ruling with fear so that people do what they want and they're so bolshy. Bolshy is not the right word, but they're so bold.
We're in control.
That they can say that there's no retribution for them from the
law enforcement.
Because it becomes a one-upmanship, you know. So if the law enforcement have success here, then there's a retaliation, and that's got to be particularly bad to show the public that the cartels are in control, despite what the police have just done.
Despite their social
somebody
media.
Or that's right.
I'll show you.
Yeah.
And how many likes is this going to get?
Yeah. It's pretty terrifying.
Oh, yuck. The idea of how many likes can this get? Jesus.
But what do you look up? Do you look up? What's the name of that?
Well, don't look it up. You'll have the Australian Federal Police around at your house.
Is it like underscore Sinatola? What's the name of the cartel again?
Oh, you want to know their handle?
Sinaloa.
Yeah, like you want to know their hashtags.
I think I've just said the name of a polo team, but anyway, accidentally.
What's their hashtags? That's what you want. You want to know how they trend?
Yeah. I really don't, but yes. Good point.
Okay.
Not only do then, you know, the police and all us have these escalating ways of dealing with the cartels. The cartels also have escalating ways of doing what they need to do. So they have paramilitary groups working alongside them. So they might have a group of people who are Mexican army, who then they start to pay off.
Yeah.
So they either have people who are current who are corrupt, or they will get people who are ex-paramilitary to come and work for them. Protection began with a focus on maintaining the drug trade, the protection from the paramilitary groups, but then it's moved into theft from other valuable industries such as oil and mining.
Look, I called Swanee out for a moniker as opposed to a monkey. Paramilitary, surely, not paramilitary.
Maybe it's just the wine. It's definitely paramilitary.
3 times. I thought it was a slur.
I've definitely been saying paramilitary in my head.
I thought so. Okay. Right.
Right. So they've now moved into theft of oil.
Why would they need to when they've got so much money through the drug trade? It's just control more and more.
The
more
money you get, the more power you get, the more.
Jesus.
Yeah, I mean, they'll end up with more money than the people trying to stop them. They probably already do have that.
Mm.
So Mexico is one of the biggest hotspots for stealing oil. and it's estimated that $1 billion is stolen each year in oil.
$1 billion.
Mexican drug gangs can earn $90,000 in 7 minutes by tapping a pipeline. And once they're done, they'll sometimes leave the open tap afterwards to allow farmers to benefit from their activities and in doing so win favour.
Yeah, there's your Bacillus Act, yeah.
Well, and the propaganda and all these things. You know, if you're a farmer and you see the cartel tapping an oil thing, you might be prompted to report them, except that they'll leave it open for you and you can get 7 seconds worth of, or 7 minutes worth as well.
I honestly don't think you're going to say a word in Mexico, are you?
But if you're going to get $90,000 worth of oil.
Oh, no, I take the oil. I'm just saying you wouldn't report them. You know, you sign your own death warrant, I think.
And not a nice one either.
There was a death warrant. Oh, true, true, true. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
There's always some horrible ending.
Yeah.
Yeah, there was a thing I was reading about El Chapo, I think it was, and he had a phrase or something, maybe it was attributed to him, which was ruling by silver or steel. And so his preferred method was to give people money to win their compliance. Failing that, he was more than happy to kill them if he needed to.
Yeah.
But so it's very common for the cartels to throw money to win favour rather than having to go anywhere else. Yeah. So also drug cartels use loads of weapons such as M16s, AK-47s and FN-57s, which I didn't know of until I heard what they may also be known as, which is cop killers. And I think there was cop killers used in one of the Lethal Weapon movies. They're basically guns that shoot bullets that pierce armour. Oh. So if the police are wearing armour, they can still get killed. And even grenade launchers.
You learn something nice every day.
Surely that's just to do with the rounds that are used.
No, it's the type of bullet and the
power of the
force
weapon.
Of the gun. Yeah, correct. Yeah. You may wonder where all these weapons come from. Well, the Mexicans have a constitutional
right. I don't allow myself to think or wonder anything about Mexico. It scares the shit out of me. I read American Dirt and I'm like, oh, now you're giving me stressful images. Have you ever read that book?
Fuck. No.
It's a lot. Everyone, and I'd love to go there. I don't understand. It feels like there's the bits that are nice and Mexico City looks unbelievable. And then I think what happens, you turn a corner and it's like, oh, there's a scary bit. Oh, there's, and then you turn the other way. I can't get my head around how geographically even it works when there's all this horror somewhere and then the people turn you having the most incredible holidays. I can't get my head around it.
I'd love to tell you that I have the answer to how you do that. And perhaps before I went, I would say that. But after reading all of this sort of stuff, I go, oh, there's a lot going on there.
Yeah.
But for us, we didn't see any of it. It was, you know, we avoided
you weren't going past it. You didn't see like areas.
And,
yeah.
Mm. Mexicans have a constitutional right to own firearms, but legal purchase from the single Mexican gun shop in Mexico City is extremely difficult. Schmitty, to your point, in 2015, official reports of the US government revealed that 71% of the drug cartel's weapons come from the US.
Mm-hmm.
I find it really interesting, just in terms of this rebels versus evil empire, so the drugs are going to America to be used and 71% of the drug cartel's weapons are coming from America. So there's all this stuff happening in Mexico that is driven by demand from the US, and then the guns are coming from the US as well. And it's not I'm not saying the US are complicit in it, but it just becomes this really complicated.
Well, what do you think Afghanistan and Iraq and places like that 100%, are complicated?
100%.
Same thing. Yeah. Like most of the weaponry that people, the Taliban and that are using against allied forces come from the US or Russia. Mm.
Yeah, and there's a whole lot around, you know, training, because the US do training of Mexican armed forces who then could become cartel members and similar sort of stuff in the Middle East. That's not to say they shouldn't be doing the training, but it just shows how complicated the whole thing is.
I think it's really difficult because while the demand is there, someone will supply it, right? And why is the demand there in the USA? I'm sure that, you know, Mexican drugs make their way elsewhere, but why is the demand there in the first place?
We'll get to the
people next like cocaine. Bit.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely right. And so, who's the real problem?
But also, people like cocaine. But think about the and the, you know, in the last 10 years or since Obamacare came in, they've tried to address the healthcare system. But there are people in America dying from Shea Panda's favourite interventions. You know, people are dying from prescription drug utilisation,
yep.
Which, by the way, they're buying off the street, not legally. They're buying it illegally, you know, because they get hooked on something through some means and then they are out there buying fentanyl and oxycodone and all those other opiates. It's a humongous problem.
So let's talk about
tell us more.
President Felipe Calderon.
Yes, let's.
So,
what a job.
On December the 11th, 2006, when newly elected President Felipe Calderon sent 6,500 federal troops to the state of Michoacan, to end drug violence there.
Michoacan,
is it?
I have no idea.
Shut up. Thanks. You're only confusing me.
I made it up.
It doesn't take a lot. It became known as Operation Michoacan and is regarded as the starting point of the war between the government and the drug cartels. Calderon escalated his anti-drug campaign, in which there are now about 45,000 troops involved in addition to state and federal police forces. That sounds like a huge number to me. I don't know if I'm off the money there, but 45,000 troops as part of the war on drugs. That's a lot to fund.
Well, it's a war.
Oh, I guess what I'm thinking of is, you know, all of the things that Mexico has to deal with, and they've got to send 45,000 troops to fight that war. It's a lot. In 2010, Calderon said that the cartels seek to replace the government and are trying to impose a monopoly by force of arms and are even trying to impose their own laws. Although Calderon set out to end the violent warfare between rival cartel leaders, critics argue that he inadvertently made the problem worse.
Probably.
The methods that Calderon adopted involved confronting the cartels directly. These aggressive methods have resulted in public killings and torture from both the cartels and the country's own government forces.
God.
Calderon's forces concentrate on taking down cartel members that have a high ranking in the cartel in an attempt to take down the whole organization. The resulting struggle to fill the recently vacated position is one that threatens the existence of many lives in the cartel. And so you
isn't that like the mafia, like when you take out a don in the mafia?
Kind of, same idea. So typically many junior cartel level members then fight amongst one another, creating more and more chaos. The drug cartels are more aggressive and forceful now than they were in the past, and at this point the cartels hold much of the power in Mexico. Calderon relied heavily on the military to defend and fight against cartel activity. His military forces did not yield significant results in dealing with the violent cartels, due in part to the fact that many police working for the Mexican government are suspected of corruption. There is suspicion that cartels have corrupted and infiltrated the military at a high level, influencing many generals and officers. Calderon was president from, I think, late 2006 to about 2012. And the casualty numbers escalated significantly over that time. So in 2006, the number of drug-related deaths was 2,119, and this more than doubled to 5,207 in 2008. Ooh. And the number further increased over the next few years from 6,598 in 2009 to over 11,000 in 2010. And in 2018, an estimated 22,500 people were killed through organized crime activities.
Did you say 22,000, the last
22,500, yeah. Huge. Bear in mind that, as I said, it's difficult for them to work out
who's done what? We'll just count all the dead bodies and some will attribute to...
So there was one thing I read that said that they do it as a percentage of the number of dead bodies
because
it's that hard to work out.
I mean, we could work out the percentage of, like, the total dead body number, but that is outrageous. And there we were complaining about one unidentified torso in the last episode.
Right.
I know, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Outrageous.
But not for the torso. It could be Mexican.
The Mexican Attorney General's office has claimed that 9 out of 10 victims of the Mexican drug war are members of organized crime groups, although it does get widely questioned. And deaths among military and police personnel are estimated at 7% of the total. So roughly 90% are the organized crime groups, 7% the military and police. On July the 10th, 2008, the Mexican government announced plans to nearly double the size of its federal police force to reduce the role of the military in combating drug trafficking. And on the 16th of July, the Mexican Navy intercepted a 10-meter-long narco submarine traveling about 200 kilometers off the southwest of Oaxaca, maybe, in a raid. Special forces rappelled from a helicopter onto the deck of the submarine and arrested 4 smugglers before they could scuttle their vessel. The vessel was found to be loaded with 5.8 tons of cocaine.
Whoa, 5.8 tons.
That is a lot.
That's Oaxaca.
Is it Oaxaca? Oaxaca. There you go. Thank you.
You're welcome.
One escalation in this conflict is the traffickers' use of new means to claim their territory and spread fear. So cartel members have broadcast executions on YouTube and on other video sharing platforms or shock sites. I always find that sort of stuff.
They're just like terrorists. I mean,
100% they are. Yeah.
Ba, 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 ba.
What's interesting is, and with the evil empire and the rebels, is that the cartels are the ones who are the evil empire, but they're using the kind of disruption techniques that you'd get with the rebels.
They're very clever. So that's why they're so successful.
Yeah, yeah.
I thought you said to Clarkie then that he was very clever.
You're very clever. And so are the cartels.
You're very clever.
Oh, this is very smart.
So there's a thing called the 2008 Morelia grenade attacks, which took place on September the 15th, 2008. And Swanee, this is why I said I really don't know how you avoid the action in Mexico.
Yep, yep.
But basically they threw 2 hand grenades into a crowded plaza, killing 10 people and injuring more than 100. So some see these efforts as intended to sap the morale of government agents assigned to crack down on the cartels, and others see them as an effort to let citizens know who is winning the war. So it's very, very complicated.
We're winning the war, so we killed you all. Yay!
Well, we can still get away with this.
We have all the power. Yeah. Okay.
Correct. Okay. Yeah. And you still should be very afraid of us. So don't think that you can now speak up because we have
all the power. We'll kill you. Yeah. Okay. Got it.
Yeah. So then, of course, there's government corruption, right? So Mexican cartels advance their operations in part by corrupting or intimidating law enforcement officials. And there's a whole lot of ways they do that. But one of the things that I found was a thing called a Pax Mafioso, which is a specific example of corruption which guarantees political votes and a following in exchange for not impeding a particular cartel. And there was an agency set up called the Federal Investigations Agency, and in December 2005, they thought that nearly 1,500 of the 7,000 agents were under investigation for suspected criminal activity, and 457 were facing charges. So that's like, you know, 1 in 5. So then there's the media, right? So the media might decide that they'll report on what's going on, as you would well want them to.
Only if you've got a Daphne in there. Otherwise they're all like, we're not saying anything, we're scared.
In the first years of the 21st century, Mexico was considered the most dangerous country in the world to practice journalism. Between 2000 and 2012, several dozen journalists were murdered there for covering narco-related news. So officers of television stations.
You're right.
I know.
Why would you go there?
Oh, fuck.
What? I don't know. It does. It sounds.
I'm so desperate to go to these places. And I go.
I'm not.
I know exactly where I want to go, and it seems perfectly normal. And then I think, and all this stuff's happening in the background. It's terrifying.
I know they've got cenotes, but aren't there like rock pools somewhere else that people aren't just likely to kill you? You know, I could do that. I'll do that instead. I'll swim in my own lake out here, not get killed. Go on.
So there's bombings of television stations and local newspapers. Cartels have threatened to kill news reporters in the US who have done coverage on drug violence.
Oh, my God.
In 2011, Notiver journalist Miguel Angel Lopez Velasco, his wife and his son were murdered in their home.
No. Okay, I'm out.
So then with the – all of this has sort of neutralized traditional media. So then there were these bloggers who did anonymous blogs to report on what was going on. And the drug cartels responded by murdering bloggers and social media users.
You know what? I could have seen that coming.
Yeah. Just randomly or the actual ones, just anyone. Actually, it doesn't matter, does it? We just have to strike fear into anyone's heart. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right.
And so in May 2012, Regina Martinez of Proceso was murdered in Jalapa. A few days later, three Veracruz photojournalists were tortured and killed, and their dismembered bodies were dumped in a canal. So there's it's pretty hardcore what they're doing. Then, of course, there's the murders of politicians.
If the politicians aren't, I mean, really,
right? It's exhausting. Like it's so deflating. So in one example, a former mayor of Tikwicheo, Michoacan, who had survived three earlier assassination attempts. Yes, my pronunciation is terrible. So she had survived three earlier assassination attempts and the murder of her husband. In November 2012, she was abducted and beaten to death.
Oh, God.
In addition, because mayors usually appoint local police chiefs, they are seen by the cartels as key assets in their criminal activities to control the police forces in their areas of influence. Imagine getting elected to be a mayor. You'd be shitting yourself that the cartels are going to come knocking.
Thank you, but no thank you. No.
So then there's the massacres and exploitation of migrants. A talk of slavery, kidnapping, ransom, murder, robbery, blah, blah, blah. In 2011, 177 bodies were discovered in a mass grave in San Fernando, Tamaulipas, the same area where the bodies of 72 migrants were discovered in 2010, where most victims died of blunt force trauma to the head.
Oh, my God.
It's a lot.
Sure is.
The National Human Rights Commission of Mexico said that 11,000 migrants had been kidnapped in 6 months in 2010 by drug cartels.
Did you do this research before you went to Mexico or after?
No, 100% after.
And would you go again based on what you're reading?
The irony is that when I was planning the trip, I was talking to a guy at work who was from Colombo, and he was saying, oh, you're going to Colombo. I'm like, oh, nah, a bit too much cartel action there for me.
Colombo? Where's Colombo?
You meant Colombia.
Oh, that's what I meant. Sorry. I knew as I was saying it didn't make sense.
I was like, Colombo's in Sri Lanka or something.
Colombo's in Sri Lanka.
I'm like, what? Okay, Colombo.
Which is where we're going next month.
Next month.
I don't think there's a lot confusing. Of cars. Well, there's probably other action there, but I don't know.
If you guys are doing anything, you're kind of making it quite public. Like, is this the call of a ruse? Like, if we put it out there, they'll think, oh, no, all in plain sight. It can't be them.
So then there's documented links between drug cartels and human trafficking for forced labour, forced prostitution and rape. The wife of a drug lord described a system in which young girls became prostitutes and were then forced to work in drug factories. In early 2010s, Los Zetas reportedly began to move into the prostitution business, including the prostitution of children, after previously only supplying women to already existing networks. So then
I feel like, you know, the Red Ripper was a pretty bad story that you did, right? And we went through two episodes of just endless horrible murders. This is getting up there for dark on dark on dark.
It is.
It's just awful. I was left after doing it, I was left really deflated because you go, what's the solution? Like, let's talk about the international effects, right? So there's a lot going on between Mexico and the US, and they've had improved cooperation that's led to hundreds of arrests of the Sinaloa cartel in US cities, which has been great. However, in Europe, the users are now paying twice the going rate of the US.
Oh, no, you poor bastards. Taking cocaine. Stop creating a demand and there wouldn't be a supply, you dickheads.
So in December 2011, the government of Spain remarked that Mexican cartels had supplied their operations in that country, becoming the main entry point of cocaine into Europe. In 2012, it was reported that Mexican drug cartels had joined forces with the Sicilian mafia. Mm-hmm. In 2016, investigation into transatlantic drug trafficking revealed that the Kinahan clan, Ireland's largest drug trafficker, among other prominent drug traffickers in Mexico, South America, West Africa, and Europe, had created an informal super cartel in an attempt to improvise business. To improve business and increase buyers. I was getting ahead of myself. So now there's a super cartel. I don't even know what the theme for them would be. It's got to be more than the evil empire. And there was a story about how there was a guest list to a wedding, and on the guest list, because it was a wedding with some bloke and all of the super cartel members were going, and so the guest list just came up to be a list of all of the members in the super cartel. So they did manage to catch a few of them.
Do you know where that wedding was held?
That was a bit stupid.
I don't. Yeah, yeah, right?
Was there even a real wedding?
Also good work by the police to find it out.
Yeah, is there even a real wedding? No, we just staged a wedding, the police, to get the super cartel. Super cartel. Super cartel. Super cartel. The super cartel. Oh.
So then the Mexican army crackdown has driven some cartels to seek a safer location for their operations.
Oh, Colombia.
Across the border in Guatemala.
There you go.
There's a huge problem with a migrant population come through from Guatemala, isn't there? They're going to the US. Like everybody here, they'll think they're Mexican, a lot of them are from Guatemala.
Oh, possibly, yeah. I'm not sure of that.
Didn't the previous president build a wall? Is there not a wall?
Is there a wall? Yeah, so there's, you know, the smugglers pick up drugs in small planes that land at private airstrips hidden in the Guatemalan jungle. Cargo is then moved up through Mexico to the US border. Guatemala, to be fair, has done dozens of arrests and of drug suspects and torched huge cannabis and poppy fields. So you can just imagine the big dope plantations going up.
Because they're in the middle of the jungle, like, so you got to find them. They're really, really heavily guarded, you know, so people get killed. It's funny because you talked about cannabis earlier. I have a small anecdote about when I was a kid and Uncle Heinz and Dad and I were on Black and White. We went out to, you know, somewhere in the lake and we went for a little walk, hiked up the hill and we came across a cannabis plantation. And I was only little and I looked at it. I didn't really, I mean, I think I knew it was marijuana. I just remember Uncle Heinz and Dad going, "We need to get out of here right now." Not that I expected that there was Mexican or Colombian
cartel type action going on,
but I think they were a bit concerned that, yeah, someone could have been guarding it. So we got out. Toot sweet. But apparently, like every time, every winter when you go to Ilden, you smell it. So apparently there's a bit of a marijuana culture up here.
Goodness.
I would know I'm past all that shit.
Gateway cartel.
Gateway cartel. Yeah, I can really see it taking off here, yeah.
In February 2009, Los Zetas threatened to kill the president of Guatemala. On March the 1st, 2010,
surprise, Guatemala's... Surprised they wanted to threaten. Do they just do these things?
Yeah, anyway? No, I just do it. Yeah.
Everyone goes, oh, you're going to do it anyway. Yeah.
Why would you be a politician? Why would you put yourself in front of this stuff? Yeah.
So on the 1st of March, 2010, Guatemala's chief of national police and the country's top anti-drugs official were arrested over alleged links to drug trafficking. So then let's go to West Africa. At least nine Mexican and Colombian drug cartels have established bases in 11 Western African nations. They've discovered that it's easier to smuggle large loads into West Africa, coming back to the Amazon thing, and then break that up into smaller shipments to Europe, mostly Spain, United Kingdom and France. Back in the US, the US Justice Department considers the Mexican drug cartels to be the greatest organized crime threat to the US. On the 25th of March 2009, Hillary Clinton stated that America's insatiable demand for illegal drugs fuels the drug trade and that the US states bears shared responsibility for the drug-fueled violence sweeping Mexico, which I thought was a really good thing. Then there's a whole lot of controversies. So Vicente Zambalda Niebla, a member of the Sinaloa cartel and son of one of the top drug lords in Mexico, claimed after his arrest to his attorneys that he and other top Sinaloa cartel members had received immunity by US agents and a virtual license to smuggle cocaine over the US border in exchange for intelligence about rival cartels engaged in the Mexican drug war. And then in October 2013, two former federal agents and an ex-CIA contractor told an American television network that CIA operatives were involved in the kidnapping and murder of DEA covert agent Enrique Camarena because he was a threat to the agency's drug operations in Mexico.
Hey, sorry, hang on a minute. The CIA has drug operations as in their growing and distributing drugs, or they have their own sting happening and this guy got in the way of it?
According to the three men, the CIA was collaborating with drug traffickers moving cocaine and marijuana to the US and using its share of the profits to finance Nicaraguan Contra rebels attempting to overthrow Nicaragua's Sandinista government. Of course, a CIA spokesman responded calling it ridiculous. Yeah. What a load of old shit.
What a load of old shit.
Yep. So now let's go into money laundering. So Mexican drug cartels and their Colombian suppliers generate, launder and remove somewhere between $18 billion and $39 billion from the US each year.
God.
In 2011, Wachovia, at one time a major US bank, was implicated in laundering money from four Mexican drug lords. In a settlement, Wachovia paid federal authorities $110 million in forfeiture. In July 2012, a US Senate report revealed that HSBC, one of Europe's biggest banks, moved $7 billion in bulk cash from Mexico to the US, most of it suspected to assist Mexican drug lords and US drug cartels in moving money to the US.
Word about HSBC.
I was going to say, is this what I said? Is there my bank with them? I said, oh, that's a little bit awkward.
Both of my mortgages are with them. Yeah. They're great.
I love HSBC.
On December the 12th, 2012, HSBC settled for a $1.93 billion fine.
They just wanted to go away. It doesn't mean they did anything wrong.
Hopefully by now you can fully appreciate what a super complicated web the Mexican drug war is, involving cartels, drug lords, governments, commercial institutions, blah, 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 pretty much everyone. But before we move to your thoughts and possibly sentencing.
We haven't, we're not in any trouble yet. And I don't want it. No, I've been sitting here thinking, okay, so good so far, no names. I think we're all right. Don't you dare ruin it for me now.
I'm not going to.
I hope you pick someone who's already dead who can't come after us. Yeah,
go ahead. That anyone could. They're everywhere.
Before we move to your thoughts and sentencing, I'd like to lighten the mood by sharing with you two very recent stories. And remember I said at the start there was an Australian reference.
Okay, yeah.
So on the 5th of January, so 2 days ago.
Oh, my God, yes.
Sky News Australia had this headline: New South Wales police expect more cocaine to wash up on beaches.
All right, yeah.
And then the story. New South Wales police expect more brick and bags of cocaine to wash up along the state's coastline in the coming days. More than 170 kilograms of drugs have been discovered along the coast between Newcastle and Sydney since December 23rd last year. The most recent discovery was at North Bondi, where a lifeguard came across 1 kilogram of cocaine, approximately 1 kilometre offshore. Each individual brick has been stamped with different phrases indicating that the drugs are being delivered to different drug syndicates. And then this from news.com yesterday. It is not clear whether the packages that have been washing up on beaches were tossed overboard or whether lost in some form of accident. But due to the presence of barnacles on some of the discoveries, it is believed they've been in the water for some time.
Yeah, I don't like barnacles on my Coke.
No. New South Wales Police State Crime Command Director John Weinstein also asked people not to go searching for remaining packages after a duo had to be rescued by water police in Pittwater while allegedly conducting their own search.
A Joe, did you say?
A duo.
A duo.
A duo. Oh, right.
Yeah, sorry.
Is it a Joe? Someone a called duo. Joe. Some Joe yeah, yeah. went out. Oh, what a pair of idiots. Okay.
And he's also had to reinforce that if someone is caught in possession of one of these bricks, it's a large commercial quantity, and that carries 25 years to life imprisonment.
We should also add is it might not be cut, so, you know, if you try and tack it, it could kill you.
Well, you know, just maybe saying. He wants to keep that bit secret.
There were loads of memes going around at Christmas saying how people had to stop their Christmas plans to go looking for I'll just see if I could try and find. Oh, here we go. I found it. White Christmas is the headline. Thousands of family lunches cancelled today as everyone is out searching for washed up cocaine. Let it snow. Beaches at Long Butts that is our coastline are packed with treasure hunters today. It comes after police announced yesterday that 7 packages suspected to contain large amounts of cocaine have washed up on beaches from Newcastle to Sydney over the weekend. There could be many more, said one man searching Manly Beach today. If I found one, all my Christmases would come at once. Thousands of New South Wales residents are scouring beaches, forcing the cancellation of many Christmas lunches. My grandma was a bit upset, but she said she fully understands, said another treasure hunter.
Yes. What a great story, the washing up of cocaine on the beaches at Christmas.
Christmas.
Let it snow.
Fagleheads.
So that's it. I thought I'd try to end on a lighter note given the trauma of the story.
It's shocking. I feel sorry for the people who live in Mexico and these, you know, areas of South America that are just controlled by drug cartels and people who have no qualms about just committing horrendous violent crimes against other people.
Mm-hmm.
It's awful.
It's just it's a lifestyle, really. It's so entrenched in, I mean, there's no escaping it. There isn't. I mean, you can't. I don't know. I wouldn't be going, oh, let me be a journalist. Let me do it. Oh, it's so hard. Anytime.
It's hard to be a rebel. Yeah.
It's so entrenched in their whole way of life. I don't know how you avoid it. And you can't say that you'd be superior and say, oh,
I don't think you can.
I don't think it works at high ground. I don't know how it works.
You try and keep your family and yourself alive. Yeah. They're your choices.
Mm-hmm.
I looked at a story which I will cover at some point in the future, which was from Mexico as well, and it's about someone who does take a bit of a stand, and it's extraordinary, but also the whole thing's terrifying. And again, that's to do with drug cartels. So I don't know, from a sentence point of view, I think they only exist because there's a demand. So is the supply the issue or is the demand the issue? Rather than say I'm going to go for the cartels, because obviously I'm not, because I'm not stupid, I think I would rather just in a sort of trial by wine magical way have anyone who buys the drugs, sells the drugs in Europe and other places, the market basically, whenever they take the drugs, it's equivalent to snorting talcum powder and they go, oh, this is rubbish, and then they don't buy it anymore, just to cut the whole demand off, just get rid of it.
I was wondering too about
same with if you shoot it up and everything else. Yeah,
the making it making drugs illegal, is that if you took that
legalizing
away,
these drugs, you mean?
Yeah. Does it? So there's been a push to obviously legalize marijuana in the US because that's where a lot of the money is coming from, and then that would allow the US to grow their own and it to be regulated and blah blah blah. And is that any better if it's a regulated Amazon doing it versus a cartel doing it out of Mexico?
Look, I think the argument about legalizing Class A drugs is that I think there are certain people who'll get them anyway, right? So there are people who are already operating in this world of having a dealer and being able to get access to drugs and buying them. If you legalize it, there is the argument that says that as long as it doesn't encourage, it's like vapes, right? As long as it doesn't encourage young people to suddenly then start taking drugs that they would not have had access to prior. But if it's a prescription type thing, then yeah, probably I think it's all right. Legalizing Class A drugs, I mean.
And I'm not sure whether it is or it isn't, but I'm wondering if legalizing it solves the cartel issue. maybe it does, maybe it doesn't. But a lot of the battles at the moment seem to be about growing it illegally, distributing it illegally, bringing it into US or whatever. Mm. And therefore there's these constant battles between what are effectively big corporate organizations supplying the masses with what they want, but it's deemed illegal versus, I don't know, any alcohol company who's supplying people with what they want despite all of the issues with that.
The difficulty with saying, okay, cocaine's legal, right? So we wave a magic wand, cocaine is legal. How do you get, as you say, what look like predominantly large commercial or corporate organizations, even though they're cartels, right? How do you get them to say, we're going to get you to pay tax now and we're going to bring corporate law in over the top of you? We won't prosecute you anymore, but we're not very good at that anyway because you're going around murdering people. So, like, you could legal – that's why I'm sort of saying it. If it's less about saying to the cartels, this is legal and you can set yourselves up to be part of that, and more about saying to the people who are buying it, give them another means to get it that is legal so that you're cutting off –
It's exactly that, right? To go, you know, you can continue to do what you're doing with all of your submarines and all that sort of shit, but we will have other.
They're not
going to
get it from you. Yeah.
Well, they won't need to do that, and they won't need to argue with the local government. You know, because a lot of the pressure on the Mexican government is from the US to do something about the cartels, right? So they throw a lot of money at the government to fix the problem, which they need to do, but they're also the destination for a lot of the drugs.
They're
supplying. As Hillary said, they're intertwined. You can't
look at one and not the other. Without the other. That's right. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's super complicated, but.
Yeah. Swanee, you going to say anything or too scared?
I'm way too scared. It is something that does creep into my mind from time to time. Mm. I'm that scared of it.
Well, Swanee and I would like to say, on behalf of Trial by Wine, that we think HSBC is a great bank and we do not endorse any of the statements made by Clarkey in this episode. And apart from that,
$1.93 billion fine was paid by HSBC.
Yeah, they can afford it and it was just,
you know,
look, we didn't
maybe
really do
they're
anything
the
wrong, but if you feel this bad about it, whatever. No, they're not the problem.
It's such a multi-layered sort of issue. Like when you think about the end user and their experience versus all the people along the way and what they've had to go through from the beginning, it is.
It should cost more.
Absolutely. And, you know, it's costing everybody's
lives.
Where
does the money go if it does cost more?
My point was just the value of it because of the amount of people who are damaged by it.
Right.
You know, it should cost more. It should be like diamond cost because it's what it does to people. And the value, if you think about it as a value chain, which is sort of what Swanee was talking about, how many people are affected and harmed
along
or whatever
the way,
along the way, then if you attributed a cost for each of those lives and everything that's happened there to the actual end product, it would cost a shit ton more.
And I think they've tried to do campaigns around that a number of times where, you know, they're showing somebody snorting it off a toilet, you know, what's the top of the toilet called? I've forgotten.
Assistant,
like off a cistern in a nightclub kind of thing, and then they're, you know, flashing to the path that it's taken and all the hardship and violence and whatever else that leads to and all the other things that then links to all the other
people
crimes, prostitution, blah, blah. And that's the thing, right? I don't actually think even it might flash through their mind intermittently, but I don't think so.
And I think you were with me one of those times. I'm sure you were.
No, I'm sure I wasn't.
No, you weren't.
I don't know what you're going to say. Oh, no.
No, just the number of times when we would
just
go out.
Just in the queue at HSBC.
No, in London. And some rando would come up, say, one line of coke. People would just offer me drugs all the time when I was in London. And I was like, no, thanks, because I'm not a drug user. No, thank you. But it just seemed so available, always. Do you know what I mean? And so back to your point about the campaigns. It didn't work. The people walking up to me going, you want a line of coke? They weren't people who worried about the value chain and the effect on all these people.
Chain.
They were just like, I don't have a store coke, have a great time. Oh, you know, they weren't bothered.
It's washing up on the beaches of Sydney. Talk about readily available.
It's white Christmas. Let it snow. All right, well, Swanee's not prepared to commit, which is fair
enough.
Absolutely
not. Absolutely not. Silence. I found it very interesting, but, well,
terrifying. I'm never going to Mexico.
But nothing is
Cancun stuff that wasn't. Mexico. I've always wanted yes, to go to Cancun.
I'd like to go to Tulum.
We flew into Cancun.
I'd like to go to Cabo as well.
My advice would be don't go to Cancun and let loose on the town. So stay in your resort and do what you do there. Be much more vigilant if you're in Cancun. And there's a place called Playa del Carmen too, which is less touristy but also similar kind of just watch it because there are people who are looking to get you hooked on drugs. Right. And
Not going there now.
It sounds terrifying.
Six episodes ago, we talked about Noosa. I'm going there. Right. Okay. All right. Well, that was very interesting, Clarky, and depressing and sad and horrific all in one. So well done. Congratulations. And as we say every week, miss you already.
Ciao. Okay.
Ciao, ciao.
Thanks for listening to Trial by Wine. You can contact us at trialbywine@gmail.com. Please rate, review, and subscribe to Trial by Wine on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. If you'd like to support us, you can become a patron at www.patreon.com/trialbywine or visit our website www.trialbywine.com to donate to us. Your support will help us cover many more cases and apply wacky sentences. We really appreciate you listening and hope you tell everyone about us. Our cover art is by John Christo and music is by Beauchamp from Pixabay.com.